What comes through are many things in the document, but above all, I think, a Franciscan love for the poor and a call to the world in different ways, whether it's obviously the Catholic and Christian people, but also to politicians and moneyed people, to say, you must be now, think again about how you organise the world's goods in favour of the poor. It's all very well to say, as he says, you know, more capitalism, more we get more money, more it'll trickle down to the poor. He said that just does not happen. So you need to alter the ways. And I think fundamentally, at the end of this, as I say, quite wonderful document, because it's so personal, so easy to read, is a call for conversion. Conversion within the church, and he admits that even his own role as Pope needs to be reevaluated in terms of how. And, of course, in the Vatican and everywhere. Ecclesia semper reformanda. It's always must be reformed. And so he's calling for that. But I think he's calling out with a particular agenda and wants everybody, from himself downwards or himself upwards, to have that evangelical approach, like Jesus, with love for the poor. That's why I think it's quite a remarkable document, really, because he's been very collegial in writing it, in terms that he's taken the things that were said at the Synod of Evangelization, from Episcopal conferences, from Pope Benedict, Pope John Paul, Pope Paul, all these people who've written great, great things about evangelism. He says, no, these all now I want to put in effect in the way that I wish to do, but not me alone, but with others, collegially. Decentralization, all kinds of things which I think are very important for the church.
You mentioned his phrase about conversion of the papacy, starting with him. What do you think that means? Because it's raised a few eyebrows, hasn't it?
Well, he quotes, in fact, Pope John Paul II in Ut Unum Sint, the encyclical on Christian unity, when he invites other Christian leaders to give ideas of how they would, as it were, not so much reform the papacy, but ideas how the Pope could, in fact, change his ways of administering his Petrine ministry. And obviously, Pope Francis is taking that seriously, and one already sees in the way he lives and his priorities that this is so.
What do you think it's going to mean in practical terms? Do we have any idea how he may be trying to implement this idea?
We'll have to wait and see. I mean, I think this is a Pope of surprises, too. But I think what he obviously would like to do to make sure that there are structures in place for collegiality with the bishops, that there are structures in place for development of the curia in terms of the service it gives to the Pope. And then in this document he talks about dialogue with fellow Christians, particularly the Orthodox, I think. It's very interesting, you know. I thought when he came on, because I was out in the square when he was elected, coming out and referring himself as the Bishop of Rome. Now, that was very welcomed by Orthodox readers. He's not the Pope, of course he is. But the first thing is, I'm first of all a Bishop of Rome, and out of that comes other. So the other patriarchs, you know, would have said, maybe this is a man we can do more business with. Because, as you know, the great difficulties that have arisen between the Orthodox Church and the Roman centre on the papacy. So any kind of new way of looking at that with regard to dialogue with the Orthodox is hugely important. And then he talks about dialogue with Muslims, because he said, unless we do that, there won't be peace. So I would have thought this document is a call for conversion on the part of everybody.
The title of Evangelii Gaudium, for someone who chose as his own episcopal motto Gaudium et Spes, that must be quite significant for you, isn't it?
Well, yes. It's very nice to have the joy of the gospel. And that's what comes through it as well, that this is a pope who himself got the joy in the gospel. And in his speech during the pre-synod, he spoke about the next pope must be one who, from contemplation of Jesus Christ, going out to the peripheries. But contemplation of Jesus Christ in prayer and in witness brings joy. And as he wants to sell people, you know, this shouldn't be a burden, this should be a joyful thing for Catholics, Christians to do.
Is it too early to talk about an impact on the church in England?
All I can say is, I don't know about when people say more people going to church, but all I can say is that in England, that everybody, when I meet everybody, not Catholics, but they all want to know about Francis. They all want to know, what do I think about this new pope? As if for many, many people, you see, all right, England isn't in that sense as it used to be a Christian country, yet in my experience, people do have a kind of longing. Our world today is like a world without a father. I speak metaphorically, you know, in that there's no one to tell it what's right or what's wrong, and that they are loved and that they are forgiven and they are accepted. All those things which a good father does. Now, even though whether they believe in Christianity, or even if they believe in God or not, because there's a lot of at least agnosticism around, somehow I think that Pope Francis has engendered a sense that there is the good, which comes from the word God, in everyone, that God is everywhere. And so people feel included in this Pope's witness. And I think that's certainly true in England. As to the effect on the Catholic Church, we shall see.